Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and with us today, we have Dr. Chris Lee, another phenomenal chiropractor. He is the founder and CEO of Elemental Shift Consulting, a neuroscience-based consulting company educating on brain-based creativity, motivation, productivity, and research-based strategy for a healthier mindset. He has consulted with eight-figure stockbrokers on Wall Street to technology companies in California on using custom biometric and neurofeedback data to build more resilient companies from the inside out. He has proudly served over 1,500 individuals and is currently working to get his neuroscience-backed mindfulness technique into the United States prison system. Dr. Chris uses the latest research and personal case studies to personalize specific brain training strategies based on each individual and company's needs so they can become anti-fragile to external change and activate more neurologically sound problem-solving abilities at will, which sounds like we could all use a lot of that this year. He's an extremely proud father to his extraordinary daughter, Phoenix, who is the greatest thing that has ever been gifted in his life. Welcome, Dr. Chris. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. I am so, so excited to be here.
Wonderful. Well, this is an impressive background, and we're definitely going to dive into the neuroscience and biometric data, which I find incredibly fascinating. But first, tell us how you arrived at this, coming from a background in chiropractic to take this departure into neurofeedback.
Yeah. So I always start off with this conversation that you and I, this discussion, where I am right now, complete miracle, complete accident. I wasn't meant to be here. I never thought that I would be here or anything else. And it really started with this knowing that I think there's this intelligence that animates things. You can call it God, the universe, whatever you do want to call it, whatever empowers you. It doesn't matter to me much. And I think that that intelligence endows us all with a specific fingerprint, a gift, something that we're just innately good at. And I think a lot of us know what that is as we're children. And then as we grow up, we forget, or it just gets beat out of us a lot of the time through education, through traumas, through all of these different things. Mm-hmm. And it had gotten beat out of me at some point in time. But I always think that the path of least resistance is what nature tends to go. A river never tries to flow up a mountain and an avalanche never falls upwards, right? Mm-hmm. I think the path of least resistance is how our gifts want to be expressed as well. And by doing that, sometimes it can be emotionally challenging and the universe, God, will give you a little nudge, like go this way, maybe try that on for size. And that's kind of where I had gotten to in 2016 is I was about a year into my doctorate, and I know you can probably share this similar experience. You finish up with like a neurophysiology midterm and you're like, what language was that like written in? Like,
right.
I have no idea. And I think, you know, we all have that one professor that's like, you're going into neurophys, like get the holy water, get the sage. Like you need to be blessed before you go into those tests. And
it's like a realm of hieroglyphics. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's like, I don't even know. Like I have so many extra degrees and like all this research. I'm like, what are you even talking about, dude? and I'd finished up with a lab practical, and I'm not somebody that sits down. I've always been a movement. I've always played sports and soccer and running and biking and cycling, all these things. So I finish up with this test and I walk out and I just go, oh, okay. And I was 22 at the time. And I was like, you know what? It's a Friday. That was my last thing. I have like 2 days and I'm going to really treat myself. So got on my bike. I headed over to Walmart and I really decided to treat myself. $3 bottle of wine, $2 dark chocolate. I mean, splurge.
Hey, big spender.
Big spender.
When you're in chiropractic school, that is a splurge.
That is a splurge. Yeah. If like I can save up to get Chipotle, it's like God has blessed me that day. So I was on my way home and had my bag full of goodies. I was excited. I was going to go home and rewatch Friends for like probably the 50th time and lay on the floor, have a good cry, and put my crazy straw in the bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And universe said, not this time. not this way. This is not your path. And you're a slow learner. We recognize your slow learning capabilities, Chris. Let us help you out. So I'd gotten a couple of nudges prior to this of like, maybe you should try this on instead of like the 9-to-5 practice, or like, maybe you should try this on, Chris. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm already like into school and stuff like that. And it's like good. And I was like, the universe said, no, this way. And the way that it pointed me was with getting a black SUV blowing through a stop sign and hitting me into a ditch. So I'm sure you have an extremely educated audience, and everybody out there can probably understand this to a different degree. We learn about something called a bucket handle fracture in chiropractic school, where the pelvis kind of like springs, and sometimes the muscles keep it together, sometimes it doesn't. So I got hit, had a concussion, had a helmet on. The dude didn't stop. And it was 2 hours later when a homeless man saw my bike and then saw me, and he rushed over and he's like, "Are you okay?" And I like came to, and I'm like, kind of looking around really, really dazed, obviously had a concussion. And I was like trying to speak to him and said, "No, I'm fine." And long story short, I ended up walking home, crash on the floor. My brother, who's also a doc, was like, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Car." And I'm like explaining this, that, and the other thing. Takes me to the bathroom. He's a year ahead of me. So we start doing ortho, neuro, visceral, all the things. And he's like, "We're going to the hospital. You're bleeding." And I was like, "The hospital it is." So we go to the hospital. Tons of inflammation. Trying to get a good x-ray on the pelvis is like trying to get like, you know, a dog to sit on like a squirrel park. It doesn't happen. So they say, "We think you have a bucket handle fracture. We think your pelvis is like being held together by like muscle tension right now. So go home, don't move." And I was like, "Okay, thanks for that, medical community." But that was like what they knew.
Yeah.
So went home and I watched my healthy body just fall apart in a week. Then 10 days, and then 2 weeks into that, I had fallen into depression. Couldn't go outside, no sunlight, no vitamin D, all the hormones, all of the schools passing me by, missed a bunch of midterms, everything. But on like day 16, stuff like this was like the next nudge. So I pick up the phone and somebody had been calling me that I haven't talked to in a really long time. And pick up the phone and go, "Hey." And they go, "Hey, I need you to get home. Call your brother. I'm on my way to your apartment right now. Don't worry about it. I'll see you in like 20 minutes. And I was like, and they hung up, and I was like, what the, call my brother who I know was in the middle of board prep. And I'm like, dude, like need you to get home. He's like, "I'm in board prep." And I'm like, "I need you to get home. Like this squirrely dude is like coming to the apartment and he told me to get you home right now." So he's like, "Okay." And he's obviously frustrated. So he packs his stuff up and he comes home and the guy pulls up and they like walk upstairs together. And I remember getting myself out of bed for the first time. And I'm like standing in the door frame, legs are super weak because I haven't really walked. I haven't really moved in like 2 weeks. And I'm standing in like the door frame, holding myself up, and hear my brother open the door. And he looks across the room to me and I see him crying. And he just runs over to me. And he just like holds me. He like really, really holds me. And then he holds my shoulders and he like holds my neck and he's like, "Dad's gone." And we both just started sobbing. And at the time we didn't really know what had happened. We had seen our dad 3 weeks ago. Like he had barbecues for us all the time. Like he had moved down to Atlanta. He worked in the movie industry and like we saw him all the time. Happy dude. And what we found out is that he had been going through this inner storm and ended up committing suicide. So a couple things they don't really teach you in school: how to pay your taxes and how to process grief. And me and my brother were both grieving and we didn't know what to do. He was 18 months older than me and I was a young man. So like we just did what we did and like you suppress it and hopefully figure it out. And I'd gone to the hospital the day after we got that information and was like, "Take all the stuff off me and take the equipment and all this. Like, I'm not going to have this on me as I go to my dad's funeral." So that was what we did. And as we navigated through that space together of planning funerals and cremation and all that other stuff, like we just cried and it was not a good space. It wasn't healthy. We both drank and this, that, and the other thing. So 3 months passed. And that was when the next hat fell. And at the time I was dating a really lovely woman and we had recently come across a period of time where it was just like, "Hey, I got crap going on in my life. You're about to graduate. Go figure out your life. Like, let's go do our own things and just separate as friends." And that's what we had done. And she had called me like 3 weeks later and another impossibility had occurred. And despite, you know, other circumstances and this, that, and the other thing, she calls me and says, "Hey, I'm pregnant." And I go, "What?" And she said, "Yep, I'm pregnant. So yeah, you don't," she's like, you don't need to be a part of this child's life, but I got this." And I was like, "No, like I will very much be a part of this kid's life. Like I've always wanted to be a dad." It's something like I'd always thought about for a really long period of time, but I was terrified. Like, who do I ask dad questions to, or like this, that, and the other thing. And like, I'm 23 and like, I have 3 more years of school left, and all this crap had been going on in my head, and my depression, my anxiety, everything got worse and worse and worse and worse. And everybody's like, "Oh, think positive and get therapy and all these other things." And I'm just like, tried it all, and the personal development, and it failed me. So hard it failed me. And it failed me enough that I found myself really, really distraught, just trying to find a solution to anything. And the solution that I'd come up with was like to escape. I'll just like hit the reset button. I'll run, I'll go away, it'll be fine. And it wasn't. But I had a mentor lean into that opportunity and see me struggle in pain and suffering, all of that. He said, "Chris, you seem hopeless. You seem lost. You seem powerless." And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he said, "Knowledge is power. And right now, the skills that you need are not the ones that are being taught." And he hung up the phone on me. I was like, what a piece of work you are, bud. But I couldn't sleep that night. Those words had really stuck with me. And I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, I don't know anything about this emotional state that I'm in. My nervous system's constantly in this fight or flight. And as a chiropractor, I knew that fight or flight was having just detrimental effects on my wellness and my well-being. And the physical limitations of my body in that fight or flight really determines like the limitations of my mental and emotional space. And I want to feel better, but my body is just trashed. So I started to go to Goodwill, and I was going to start to read these books by these gurus and people that like understood emotions and leadership and quantum entanglement, all of these different things. And I was not a fast reader at the time, but I was an okay reader, and I could read about 2 books a week. Not bad. Okay. And it wasn't enough. So I started to go to YouTube, how to speed read, right? Typing all those things in YouTube. So great. And I got up to 10 books a week. And then I was like, still not fast enough. I still feel like crap. And I end up stumbling upon this other method that allowed me to take my reading speed, which is now about like 800 words, and it boosted it to 32,000. So now I can read 10 books a day. So in 3 months' time, I'd consumed over 300 books and still felt like trash. I called my mentor and I like sent him this angry email. I'm like, "I know everything, but I still feel like trash." He said, "Yeah, knowledge is power, but it's potential power. It's what you choose to do with that knowledge that empowers you." And I was like, "You're a real piece of work." And he was wise enough to know that I was way too stubborn to accept anyone else's leadership but my own. That type A personality, lone wolf, like, yeah, you could tell me, but I'm going to figure it out on my own type of thing. Like, I don't need the instructions for these Legos. And right.
I might know something about that one.
Yeah, just a little splash of that in everybody's life. So I started to implement these skills. And what I really fell in love with was not the psychology, the personal development, all of those things didn't work for me. But what I could understand was that, cool, neuroscience, this part of my brain is underactive and is therefore having this mental effect. And this part is overactive and is therefore having this mental effect. And there's got to be strategies that like balance the system, or that turn this area on and turn this area off. And once I started to understand that and really start to piece it together, I also had this realization that, you know, the day that you plant the seed is not the same day that you get the vegetable, right? And I was like, this is going to take time, and I am dedicated to this cause. And I made a declaration that no matter what, tomorrow I'll be better than I am today. And I stuck to that declaration. And over time, I learned mindfulness, meditation, journaling, question asking, emotional intelligence, social emotional learning, and compartmentalized all of that into, is this going to help my brain express the innate intelligence of my gift? So fast forward 3 months after having that realization, I did my first consulting gig. Fast forward 6 months after that, I had spoken to a Fortune 500 company. Fast forward a year into that, I had started my consulting agency in the middle of school. And then fast forward to where I am almost 4 years after I found out that I was going to be a dad. I run a consulting agency, multiple six-figure business, and I do private practice here and there, but most of the time I'm a public speaker and I'm a professional coach. Mm-hmm. And I am not meant to be here, but this is where I was always intended to go. So that's how I got to the space where I am now. So like you had mentioned, I help people understand their nervous systems and use education to allow them to create more empowered leadership strategies for their consulting agencies. But more so now, it's really helping leaders empower themselves in understanding how they regulate and where they want to go and where they're at right now. And then building a bridge between the potential of who they should be or who they want to be and where they're at right now, and using some scientific validated steps to get them there.
That's beautiful. And what an incredible story, and the synchronicity of even that beginning with a neurophysiology test before, you know, heading off. And you so gently call these things nudges, where I think in my world, I would call those the cosmic 2x4s.
Yeah.
Really gentle. You don't want to meet the cosmic 2x4s if that's your gentle. But what an incredible way to dig into this experience and these experience of grief and pain and suffering, and see what, because I don't think that, suffering is the gift. I think it is the opportunity to find the gift. And that's really what you dove into, and looking at how our brain works. And, you know, we've had a psychologist on the podcast before talking about how really, you know, this whole idea of having chemical imbalances it's gone bunk. It was a really great theory in the realm of trying to get pharmaceutical support for depression and anxiety and all these different psychometric measurements of health. But what it comes down to is, are you strong in all the right places? Or are you firing off kilter here or there that gives you a worldview that is not productive and creative, but closing in on itself? And for you to turn that axis on its head and move forward is just not just an incredible gift for you, but then those that you are teaching about it now.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm a big proponent of like teaching in small increments that hopefully mm-hmm. make sense. So mm-hmm. we talk a lot about in our world, especially in the chiropractic and the wellness community and preventative maintenance and all these beautiful mm-hmm. things, feelings versus emotions. And they're very, very different, right? Emotions are chemical, right? And kind of like you talked about, the chemical things have been debunked because chemicals have a half-life. They maybe last 115 seconds total, mm-hmm. but a feeling is a neurological state, right? It's something that self-perpetuates. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we talk about, vagal tone theory. We talk about frontal cortex activation. It's something that you get to reside in. So like right now, I'm in a state, right? And the way that I feel is being expressed through a feeling. It's not an emotion. The emotion sparks the trigger of remembering that pathway in the nervous system. But mm-hmm. like you talked about, like if I can actually get into and sustain that state, I'm going to wire in neurological systems and pathways and use Hebb's law and all these other things, just like Wolf's law, right? If I sit on my sit bones, the sit bones will grow, right? There is a mm-hmm. supply and demand in the body. So I'm going to supply my brain with those same things. So I'm going to mm-hmm. give it the neurological nutrition of cool, gratitude, appreciation, meditation, community, healthy support, and then feed it the things that I know it wants to have, which for me at the time was not this perpetuation of I am lost, I am broken. It's this cool, I hit ground zero, and ground zero is a really bouncy place, turns out. So I'm going to use the force and momentum of the crap that I was gifted and plant some really great seeds, and then use that to leverage mm-hmm. my growth. And it's a mental choice, right? That's your born sovereignty to say, I choose good, I choose bad. Your nervous mm-hmm. system automatically assumes Sharknado in the morning, right? It doesn't wake up and go, today's going to be like, today's the day I find the love of my life and $100 bill on the ground. I bet today I just mm-hmm. wake up in this profound state of gratitude. It's something you have to train, because naturally mm-hmm. your system wakes up and goes, I have this huge list I'm not going to get done. My partner yelled at me, and like my daughter mm-hmm. like never wants to eat her breakfast, and like all of these different things stack up. It doesn't wake up in this state of gratitude unless you train it to do that. So some of the things that we start to, go ahead.
I was going to say, because that speaks to the cognitive bias of what it is to survive and what has gotten us this far. And I think, you know, when we talk about Hebb's laws and Wolf's law, for anyone who doesn't have the background in it, those are both two different terms in different systems to say what we use, what we stress, what we demand grows, which we can see that across our life in a whole bunch of different ways. And so in this way, you know, the things that have served us, this waking up looking for, what's going to eat me,
where's my food coming from? What are these stressors that are going to keep us alive? Historically, that is what got us here, what made us survive. But now we're at a point where as we continue focusing on all of these stressors, what, you know, Chris, what you listed out, and even the cell phone that won't stop pinging and the emails that don't stop piling up, if we continue to focus on that, it will persist and we will perfect our anxiety of stress. We will run those routes in our brain until we're doing them in our sleep. And how many of us are already doing them in our sleep?
Yeah.
Or like you're saying, you make a different choice, but then you have to run those routes. You have to stress them and make them the new normal, the new habituation of your brain.
Yeah. And that's very much the pathway in the nervous system too. Mm-hmm. Like when we look at addiction, so many of us are addicted to our limitations, and that's not just like a pretty Hallmark card. So many of us are like innately addicted to the things that like suppress us because the brain needs certainty, right? That's the thing that it craves most of all, is I want to know predictable futures. And your limiting factors build up really beautiful walls around how you express. And the moment that you do something new or novel and you don't have a system that can handle that kind of stress, your brain goes, whoa, 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 bud, this is something new and therefore dangerous and it shall kill us. And it'll self-sabotage you back into those old limiting beliefs. So, because it puts you back into this box of this is nice and home, right? Like, let's keep you in this closet. We know, like you open the door and there's food and this, why would you want more when what you have is just phenomenally okay? And it's like, oh, that's not exactly what I signed up for.
Well, and I wonder if even more than saying phenomenally okay, because I think that's a way that we like to focus in on, like, good enough, it's good enough.
Oh.
But when you talked about your brain craves certainty, I wonder if we could even start to suggest that your brain's going, this is phenomenally certain. I know what's going to happen. And that is more important than our happiness, than the overwhelming possibility of things that aren't for sure. Because that's terrifying. I watch patients trying to get out of pain cycles. I watch, or getting out of addiction cycles, any of these things where it is, I see the pathway, I see the tools, that knowledge is potential, that information is potential that you were talking about, but my certainty is more comfortable. How do you let go of that certainty when that is exactly the comfy armchair that our brain wants to reside in?
Oh yeah. And it is so comfortable to say pizza night's on Friday and we wake up at this time, and you go through these loops, right? And it's the same day, and your system loves it. Like the meat suit loves it, but you are not the meat suit. So from like a neurological standpoint, you have like the three brains, right? You have the reptilian brain, which is the autonomic nervous system. You move up to the mammalian, which is your limbic system, which is your emotions and feeling coordination. Then you move up to the neocortex, which is your cognitive like awareness. That's your sovereignty. That's your choice. That's your perspective enhancing. So many of us are stuck in the autonomic nervous system. We're so stuck in this, I don't feel safe. And the passcode into the emotional self, where your belief systems and the lens that you actually perceive life is in the limbic system, right? Because we all want to have a perspective and an emotion that colors and contrasts life. But the question you need to ask yourself to get out of this like habitual pathway is, do I feel safe? Because if you do not feel safe, you will never escape up to the next level. And if you're not doing things to help create safety and certainty inside of the uncertain, because the uncertainty is like a given, right? Like stuff is going to come up. Like it's a promise. Like I guarantee you, like I'm going to go. And even though I know the pathway to go pick my daughter up from school, I don't know if I'm going to hit the red light. I don't know if like somebody's going to like come barreling into me, but I have the skills and strategies built in to like prepare for that. And that's like an autonomic thing. What we're not prepared for is like, what happens like when a friend betrays you? What happens when abandonment comes up? What happens when all of these social emotional triggers begin to pop up in your life and suddenly you feel very attacked, therefore defensive, therefore not safe, and you sink back down into your limiting self-sabotaging beliefs to create confinement, labeling, and certainty? So to step out of that, you actually need to step out of like yourself. You need to get perspective. And by doing that, you cannot read the label inside of the jar. Right? That's what I tell my clients over and over and over again. And right now they're living inside of the jar and we can't see what you're actually made up of until we get outside of that. Right. So for me, chiropractic coaching and getting outside of myself, literally having other people say, this is what I'm recognizing. Right. And having friends that are not going to criticize, but they're going to offer you perspectives of like, hey, this is what I'm recognizing in the way you're presenting yourself. And then going, without any like emotional attachment to the things that you're doing are wrong, but with a growth mindset, literally saying, I'm going to take this opportunity to like grow. Cool. I recognize that as well. And am I willing to do work on that? Right. There's willingness and awareness. Those are the two biggest things. And to have the willingness to change, you also need to know what you're trying to change. So putting those two things in order are critical.
Well, and that's having, I love that you can't read the label from inside the jar, that mirror of holding up of this is how I see you. Do you want to see yourself that way? Or are you done seeing yourself that way? Is there a new path? And when we talk about getting to that level of safety, it just made me think of this last year that we've had going through pandemic worldwide, is that we all had the certainty wipe away. All of those familiar things, all of those areas where we know we have that habituation. Friday night is date night. Well, now you can't leave the house. So, or where my kid goes to school, now my kid can't leave the house. So we lost all that things, and we seem to have had two choices in that moment. Either continue to consume a lot of the fear and the anger and the overwhelming uncertainty at the global stage, which there was definitely plenty available, or make what is almost a rebellious choice and choose to figure out how do I feel safe in my world and look at that mirror of myself without the confinement of and judging of people who make themselves feel safe in a way that is different than mine. And I witnessed a lot of push-pull of that.
Yeah. It's such a strong contrast too, because you know, you have to be extremely careful to what's around you in your environment. Mm-hmm. So like in our house, don't have a TV, right? Wi-Fi goes off at like 7 p.m. and we read books, we light candles, we have chalkboards all over the place, we draw, we color. Those are the choices that we make, right? I don't listen to the news because what's it going to tell me? More fear that I already know, right? So like the question I want to invite everyone to ask is, has fear ever served you, right? Because 99% of the fear that you're going to experience is worry or anxiety of something in your future that's never going to come into fruition, right? Mm-hmm. So especially with the pandemic, is this going to serve me? And do I have any control of what's going on, right? And most of the time it's like, okay, they're going to do a lockdown. I could say, screw the mask and screw all of this. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to like, you know, go do all these other things. And you're perpetuating the fear, right? Are you actually evoking more fear inside of people? Or can you use this as an opportunity and say, awesome, I'm going to be at home for 3-6 months now, who knows at this point, right? And what can I do at home, right? So like I started gardening and now I have herb gardens and like I decided to like get into yoga and now I'm like a yogi and all these other things. Like I made all of these choices inside of myself and I said, great, I used to read 10 books a week. I want to bump it up to like 20 because I'm home now, right? And now I'm like, okay, I don't have any other books left that I want to go reread. I want to get into like journal articles, right? So I'm going to go into Neuron and peer reviewed things. And like I used it as an opportunity. If I'm going to be at home, what do I want to do at home, right? So like, right now I'm like a hummingbird person. I have tons of hummingbirds that are constantly on the front porch. Like the plants are thriving. The house is always clean. Like all of these different things, like meal prepping, like I made a choice in that moment to lean in and not be confined and defined by fear, because that's what fear wants to do. It enhances the focus of the problem, but it does not provide a solution. What you want to do is get outside of yourself and say, I'm recognizing fear, give it the awareness that it actually craves, right? Because that's the thing, fear is a shadow and you bring light to shadows and actually see that big monstrous thing that you thought, it's a little teddy bear that wants to be seen, heard, felt, and validated, right? Do some of that for yourself and then say, awesome, I'm going to be home and I can't have the date night. Or if you're single, I can't go out and like meet new people. This is an opportunity to go within. Right? I'm going to go find all the crap and all the wounds and let the light come in and expose those triggers that I have and then go forth and say, cool, I got some work to do. And then do the work at home, mindfulness, meditation, journaling, get a coach, get a therapist, get a body work facilitator, anything, right? Like I know you and I are like big old proponents of chiropractic because there's every neurological research coming out saying that there's the mesolimbic system, which is a part of the limbic system, lives inside of the spinal cord. You literally can produce emotions out of the spine and create neurological tone from that. Well, guess what profession actually facilitates the expression of that? And like every research study saying that getting chiropractically adjusted activates the frontal cortex, which in my perspective, activates your sovereignty. So you're doing your own thinking again, because everything in the world is trying to teach you what to think. Only you can teach you how to think.
You need those pauses in that space in between the emotion and the trigger, the quiet to come back to that frontal cortex, that executive functioning of your brain. And we keep talking about the mesolimbic system. Limbic, just start associating that with emotion, because when we get caught in that emotional response, we can continue the thought exercises of perpetuating fear or the thought exercises of choosing opportunity. And I think this starts to really circle back to how, you know, mindfulness in itself is fantastic. I mean, CBT therapy, you know, saved me, got me out of depression. But that in and of itself is not the whole picture, because it's not just changing a behavior. If it was as easy as changing a behavior, we wouldn't need anything like diet culture. We wouldn't need personal trainers. We would just, you know, what I want to do now, new behavior.
Yeah, now there, I am triathlete.
Yes, done. Does not work that way. But what comes to it is that witnessing and viewing of how you hold and see yourself and see the container of your world, that certainty, and how you want to ascribe yourself within it. So can we dive a little bit deeper into how this maybe sounds like mindfulness exercise, but is really another layer deep?
Oh yeah, there's layers to this. Like it's like an ogre or like an onion, right? Maybe if you've ever watched Shrek.
I know, we're dating ourselves now.
Yeah, gonna be great. So your brain will never take action on something it does not understand, and your brain will never take action on something that does not give it a positive future. Two certainties that your nervous system will never grasp onto. So again, your brain creates a lens for reality, but your mindset is the seed of potential. Your brain lives in your mind, and therefore your brain is the soil of that, right? So there's multidimensional things that your soul, for lack of better words, or your true mind is actually going to try to express in. So that is this big glowing light, right? That we are like, I think everybody can probably agree that you are this limitless potential. And if you don't believe in that, go hang out with some kids, right? Like they know that and they say, all right, I'm going to like be this limitless potential. Like, I don't know if I can climb that tree, but boy, I'm going to try, because like, why not? And their brain is attached onto the curiosity of understanding their world. And I think that's why all of us have kind of come in here, is to understand the world through the fingerprint that only we can do. But then emotional traumas come up and it's like, all right, we're going to put a wall here, because if I try to go that way, pain and suffering is that way, and it hinders our light. And then we put another one up and okay, well, I don't go that way because again, that's another painful ouchie. And then we build up these like protective boundaries for ourselves, and it hinders our light. And then eventually, if you start to like confine and define that light, it begins to suffocate it. Right. And I think that's what a lot of us like feel sometimes. I call it white ceiling syndrome, that you go to bed at night and you're staring up at the ceiling and you're like, what happened? Like, I feel like I just woke up out of here and now I'm back. Right. Like, I feel like nothing happened. I feel like today was the same as yesterday. Right. Well, you didn't express yourself. You didn't get curious. You didn't get playful. So what's the way to actually do that? Well, for me, I help people create a vision or a version of themselves that they're actually not like rebuilding, but the remembering is actually them, right? I want to create that bridge between the known and the unknown and make that move into, this is who you remember yourself to be. Like, who were you as a kid? Curious, playful. I want to go play in nature, all of these different things. And then creating literally an emotional anchor through like visualization process and all these other things of like, cool, like let's walk through this step by step. How does it feel to be limitless? What does that feel like inside of your body? Like if you woke up today and had no limitations, who do you get to show up as, right? Who do you get to be? Not what are you doing? Who do you get to be, right? Are you waking up at 4:30 and doing yoga? Are you waking up later with your partner? And are you bringing them coffee in bed? Or like all of these different things, like play inside of those questions for a moment and then see how that feels inside of your system. And when you're able to do that, for us, we create emotional anchors, right? And that emotional anchor is literally a chemical trigger to say, oh, wait a second. I have 120 seconds, maybe right now, to see if this is something that aligns with the version of myself that I want to become. And if it doesn't, awesome. Not the path that I want to go, but it's not putting up boundaries. It's redirecting, right? So when you can go in that direction and start to create those exercises every single day, or reflection practices are my favorite. Every time I go to bed, like, I have three journals on my desk right now. I am writing all of the time to check in with myself, because similar to you, I'm a tire kicker. I'm a physician. I've been biochemistry, all of these different things. I want to know what works and what doesn't work. And as much as I want to believe in surrender and letting go and like truth and compassion and all of that, my system intellectually understands that, but the furthest distance that you're ever going to have to travel is knowing something and feeling something. And for me, that distance seems to be really far to like embody what limitless is like. So every day I go through and do a reflective practice. What are three things that felt really good to me today? And what are three things that I felt limited in my expression of doing? And then I can go back and through that practice, shine light on those fears. And then the next day I have the invitation to see, are they really manifesting again? Or has just the awareness of them completely diminished those pathways? But like remembering that limitless like version of yourself, like that's what has worked for me. And like it works for so many other clients of mine. It's going to start working in the prison systems and going through forgiveness and compassion practices and removing the labels of judgment and confinement and like this like attack that we like tend to do when we get scared. Uncertainty produces that. But if we can reel back and say like, we're all on spaceship Earth right now. And like, we have a choice to like attack your neighbors or like to be compassionate. It starts inside of you. If you want to be more loving and more compassionate with your partner, your child, people that you work with, that's an inside job, right? Yeah. To go through is to go in.
It's the only way to really tackle it all, because what ends up happening is we become prisoners of the walls we create for others. So if I'm shaming you or shaming the person who's walking outside my house doing something that I don't agree with, then I am really also creating that limitation of shame for myself. Because if they're not allowed to do it, I'm sure not allowed to do it. Or if I do it, then there's another wall of hypocrisy that I've put up there as well. Yeah. And so we keep putting up these judgments and otherings and otherings, and it further defines the walls within which we can live. And so I love, as you're talking about this reflective process of experiencing the emotion and either experiencing the emotion of, is this limitless or is this fear? And then taking that reflection back on the fear and saying, is there another way out and around? Because this goes right back to what we were talking about at the beginning when we talk about the, you know, the chemistry of that feeling is so quick. And then the emotional component of it, we can sit with, we can nurture, and we can create those pathways that are our own way out of fear and anxiety and the rut of what am I doing day after day, which I certainly don't have the patience for myself.
For sure. So there's two things that I want to briefly mention around all of this, because some of this can get etheric, right? I can understand that, like, oh, fear and like this, that. Cool. Let's talk like the brain for a second. There's areas of the brain that are going to get activated through this exercise that I want to show everyone. So it's a 1-2 breathing ratio. So if all of this is like above like your level of trust in the information, which I get, been there for sure. Like, that's really nice. Like, you guys are having a really beautiful philosophical conversation, but fear is a neurological thing, right? It produces a very specific pathway. You can measure it on fMRI. I can measure it with all kinds of things, right? The thing that I want to remind everyone is that that pathway is manifesting through the way that you're thinking, right? The brain state is creating the mind lens, right? So you can change the brain state to reevaluate the new lens. So my favorite exercises, breathing exercises, it's square breathing, right? Tons of valid evidence that says square breathing actually stimulates an alpha theta brainwave, turns on the frontal cortex, turns down an overactive cortisol response, all of these different things, right? You can measure morning cortisol levels, which is just the amount of stress you can handle during a day based on how much your system like preps for it, right? So you wake up in the morning, long story short on this, and your body produces a stress hormone called cortisol. The more cortisol you have produced in the morning, the more your system is like ramping up for like war. And the less that you have, the more your system is like, oh, cool. Like, it's daisies and unicorns today. You want that lower stress level. You don't want it diminished, because that diminishment goes into depression, but there's a healthy level inside of there. And the exercise that I want to teach you is one of those that like really helps to stimulate that. So for 5 minutes a day, for the first week, you square breathe, which looks like breathing in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. It is going to flood your frontal cortex with blood, oxygen, nutrients. It'll fire it back up. I know some people like get minor headaches from that, because it's like, oh, that hasn't been turned on in a while. And you're like breaking off the cobwebs. And inside of that, after that 5 minute break, I want you to just check in. How do you feel? What are you thinking now? Right. And if 5 minutes like wasn't long enough, sweet. You're going to lose track of your count. I'll tell everybody, I do this for like 20 minutes a day now. And I lose track of my count. I'm like, what? 1, 2, 3, or I'll like float off on like the thought train. And coming back to that, every time you come back to the breath, that is you doing the brain curl, right? I want bigger biceps, I do bicep curls, right? Every time you return to the breath in the counting, you're doing mental curls and you're enhancing focus, which is part of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex. That's your focus concentration, right? You want to build that up, right? So you can actually focus on the things that you want to focus on. The square breathing technique really does that. Now, in the moment, like crap is hitting the ceiling and you're very challenged, you want to move into a 1-to-2 inhale to exhale ratio. So breathing in for 4 seconds, breathing out for 8. It's going to stimulate an area of the pons, which has to do with your respiratory response. And it actually creates a more regulated vagal tone, which embodies this level of like groundedness. So like when we talk about grounding, it's a somatic experience, which means it's something you experience in the body, not something you experience in the mind. So if you breathe in for 4 seconds, breathe out for 8 or 10, that is going to drop you back into the body. It's going to oxygenate. You're going to bring air into the lower quarters or the lower quadrants or lobes of your lung, where you diffuse more CO2 and bring in more oxygen. And by doing that, you're going to give yourself this different response, right? And what that response is different versus the reaction is that now you have your choice back, right? You get to choose and say, okay, I recognize this and I'm not going to take that pathway. And that's a tool that I use. Like my daughter is 3 right now, 3.5, right? We said 3.5 and change.
Yeah.
And back to that pathway, the first thing that I started to teach her when she started to like understand sign language was like, breathe. So now every time like she gets upset, she goes, and she says, Daddy, I feel better. And I say, oh, thank God, because I'm losing my stuff over here, right? It's like, she's so quick to respond. And I'm still over here like, Daddy needs like 2 more breaths before I come back down to earth, because like parenting is like super fun, but like teaching these things, it works, right? If my like, my daughter was a year and like a month when I taught her those things, and she still does it to this day. And like, she has a bunch of different like other mechanisms now, but like if it works for a 3-year-old and it works for my grandma, and I've taught it to potato farmers out in Idaho, it can work for you too.
Well, and that huge download is such a gift of information, because we have that ability to regulate and set our day with the square breathing. And I love the vagal breathing, the 1-to-2 ratio. I teach that to my patients as well. Teach that to my daughter. We call it magic breath. And it is just this calm. I've seen it reduce blood pressure by about 20 points with just 5 breaths can reduce an elevated blood pressure. This is not woo-woo. We could make it woo-woo. We could throw in all of the language and make it a philosophical, esoteric, you know, unicorns and rainbows. Okay, we're saying unicorns and rainbows, but
I love unicorns,
we
could, too.
They're fantastic.
They're great. It's a magical animal. It's my spirit animal.
Yeah. We got unicorns all over our house now. But this is really grounded in the science and the neuroscience of what's happening in our brain. Yeah. This is very much how we can train our brain. And when you start talking about brain curls, what we don't realize is we have perfected the brain curls of squirrel brain, of what's that notification? What's that ding? What is that big brother is watching advertisement coming in on my phone? What my boss is telling me to do? What my child is telling me to do? We have exercised that brain curl, and we are so perfectly phenomenal at doing that. Good job, you perfected something.
Yeah.
Do you want to perfect something different? Do you want to reroute how your brain is exercised so that you can give power back to that decision-making? Like you said, get your choices back you can make that choice coming from a place of emotional clarity and executive functioning, not fight, flight, or freeze, which is that reptilian lower brain. We have all of these levels we can access, but we are only as good as what we have practiced.
Yes. There's so much inside of that. Mm-hmm. Your system comes in default, like literally a part of the brain that runs. It's called the default mode network, right? It's set up to just run automatically, right? You can put somebody on life support and they'll live until they catch a disease in the hospital or anything like that. The brain will run itself by itself, but the mind inside actually can, if you change your mind, you can rewire your brain and rewrite your story. That's the thing I tell everyone, but you need to be able to change your mind. And for most of us out there, like we never get that choice, or we never realize that we can actually do that, but it's a 1% shift. Right? That small 1% thing that you do every single day with intention and focus and energy, because by default, and this is a pathology, like you want to talk about the pandemic that's going to go on, it's going to be depression and anxiety in the next five years. Like if you talk to any therapist, anybody out there that's like looking at what's going on, they are terrified of the next 3 to 5 years of what mental health is going to look like. Suicide rates in 10 to 14 year old girls have skyrocketed in the last year. That stuff terrifies me. Having a daughter, right? Like our social emotional learning is completely depleted because we social emotionally learn through body language, because body, like it's expressed through the body. Most of it's expressed through the face, which is a part of the body. We are now covering up like 76% of our facial muscles with a mask. Like my daughter needs those things to recognize emotion, because like, are you safe? Are you not safe? And I can't tell by your eyes. I need to see your body language and your posture. When people are completely covered up, she's like, and like learning to do that. So we're still going to the playground and we're doing those things. But the pathology that I recognize is defocus. Our system right now is so wired to defocus, and like social media is the culprit. 15 second TikToks, 15 second reels on Instagram. Not okay. Your brain is being wired to defocus on things. 15 second swipe, 15 second swipe, 15 second swipe, 15 second swipe. You are building a habitual pathway in your gyrus, which is a portion of your brain that controls your subconscious habits, to defocus on things. Like if you watch a movie and you also have your phone, that's a challenge for you. You're telling your brain to multitask away and distract away from what's actually real. Like when I really look at the successful people that are grounded and have direction, they are cannonball, not firework, right? Cannonball and firework have the same amount of gunpowder. One goes up, looks really pretty, but it's completely gone in like 6 seconds. Cannonball through a wall, gets stuff done, right? You want to be the cannonball, right? You want to have direction and focus and intention. Learning to focus again and like recognizing triggers on your phone. Like, hey, look how much time you're spending on your phone. That's what I always tell people. I run a full business off of my phone fully, right? I can take my phone, I can get in my car or the camper or any of these other things, and I can take my business on the road with me instantly. And 3 hours a day, that's when I'm on my phone, is 3 hours. Like, that's it. And I look at someone, and the scariest one that came up to me, this guy's like, I don't know, my family feels like it's deteriorating. And I said, do me a favor. Will you share your screen, go into your settings and show me your screen time? 17 hours a day, this dude was on his phone. I'm like, what are you eating? Or like, what are you doing? He's like, oh my gosh. So like, give yourself that little like, oh, gentle, like 2x4 to the back of the head and say, where are you putting your attention and focus? And if it's like 6 or 7 hours on your telephone, there's a world outside of that black mirror that's like looking for the gifts that you have, and like unplug from that matrix for a second. Like, just look around at the world that's waiting for you.
I love that. Oh, the black.
Get off my soapbox now.
I love it. And it really, it's speaking of the habituation and time, as our time runs down, man, there are just so many rabbit holes we could keep going down. This has been such a juicy, phenomenal conversation. I hope that it has really lit up for a lot of people that, you know, it's not the most complicated thing, but the simplest thing that we need to do. And the simplest thing is often the hardest thing. Yes. And as we issue this challenge and the lessons we can take from this conversation today, it's about, what are you habituating your brain towards? What mirror do you want to look at? I love you calling this the black mirror. I'm going to be running with that now. Are you going to be sticking with your phone in the black mirror that gives you 15 second switchbacks on anxiety, fear, depression, fear mongering? Or are you going to be looking at that mirror that helps you read the label outside the jar, that helps you sit without judgment and look for possibilities, look for a larger container in which to create safety and certainty in your life that isn't caged in with fear? Yeah. This is really a choice moment. And as you said, it is a terrifying precipice that we are sitting on of, where are we going to go emotionally in the next 5 years?
Yeah. And I want to reiterate, a hammer is a tool and a weapon. It's how you use it is what defines it. You are a tool and a weapon. And is somebody using you, or are you choosing to build something out of yourself? Same thing goes with a phone, right? You, if you go to look at my Instagram, I follow less than 100 people, and I have like a 45 minute limit on that, right? That includes all of my work, all of it. I'm very, very careful with what I choose to participate in, because it can evoke emotions inside of me that my daughter is an emotional sponge right now. right? Mm-hmm. Any child that's under the age of 12 is an emotional sponge, and they're picking up body cues. Kids don't care what you say. They care about how you make them feel. That's also a really great marketing tactic for anybody out there that's wondering. People don't care what you say. They remember how you make them feel, right? Kids don't care what you say. They remember how you make them feel. I validate my daughter's emotions frequently. And if she's having like a challenge day, I'm like, is it you or is it me right now? Right. And then I have to do the reflective practice to go, cool. She's not upset. It's not her right now. It's me. It's something inside of me that I get to go work on. And then her and I have a conversation. Daddy needs five. Can you go do your puzzles, or can you go draw, or like, can we go outside? And we have practices. We call them mental models, ways to think through stress, ways to exist in these paradoxes, because it's challenging.
Yeah. Oh, that's so much. And such small places to start, just witnessing. And how do you want to see your day? Dr. Chris, thank you so much for all of your incredible knowledge and science-based information, because of course it is. If people want more, because I know you've got tons of rabbit holes and unicorns to light up their world, where can they find you?
Yeah. So please come reach out. If there's questions, I am the only one that runs like any social medias that I'm on. I'm the only one that touches my like direct messages, all of that. So if you want to go to Instagram, Clubhouse, Twitter, Facebook, all of it is at Dr. Chris Lee. Drop me a message. And if you're like, I don't know if I'm picking up what this guy's throwing down, if you go to the link in my bio inside of my Instagram, I run a masterclass, and 90% of that masterclass I'm running with it on a 6-lead EEG. So you can actually watch me do this stuff with my own brainwaves, that I'm like not making this stuff up. Awesome. And then I also teach biometric feedback, which is like proving this, that the things that I'm teaching actually work. And the guarantee that I give people that if you don't get biometric changes, I give you all your money back. No thoughts, no questions. And over the 2,000 people I've served now, I've never had a person not get changes. So like, you are the change you wish to see. And when you respect that level of responsibility, it can be scary, but that's how you reclaim your power.
I love it. Oh, the responsibility, the intention, the beauty of it all. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for joining us today and tuning in for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement. Join us next time as the movement continues. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.